This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Tass.
Macca, I'm very pleased to welcome to our studio this morning Victoria's very own police commissioner, Graham Ashton. Good morning to you, Graham.
Yeah, good morning. It's great to be with you.
It's great to have you in the studio, and thank you for taking some time out of your very busy schedule to speak with our community and engage with our community very directly.
No, pleasure.
As you would understand, there has been some very deep concerns in our community about a couple of incidences that have taken place in the last week. One last Saturday night, I believe, at Hares and Hyenas, and another one on Sunday night. But let's talk about Hares and Hyenas first.
Yeah, we had a dreadful set of circumstances last weekend. We had, we ended up in a situation where, I guess, a prominent member of LGBTI community was injured by us in an arrest. It was an arrest that that was made in error, essentially, and they'd been chasing a carjacker across Melbourne suburbs, the police on that night. It was in the early hours of the morning, I understand, and the carjacker's gone down a lane and abandoned the vehicle, and then they've used they arrived there, their friend wasn't there, and then they've used the dog to try and pick up a scent. The dog, you know, was sort of indicating in the laneway. And then the police have gone into a premises there, and a person has left the premises. They've gone after that person, and then he's been injured in the arrest. But it turns out that person was not in any way connected with the carjacking.
And the person is very well known in our community. Precisely. Nick Demopoulos.
He couldn't have written a script like this that could be any more unfortunate. And they've acted. The police have sort of thought they were chasing this offender, and sometimes happens with these when they find they're doing that. The offenders sometimes dump a car and then try and do a home invasion, get another car that we don't know about, and then take off in that. And I think that's probably what's going through the police mind when they've gone into that place, was thinking that might have been something that was going on in there. And then it's just been, you know, a set of circumstances where, you know, for that to be anybody, but let alone a prominent member of LGBTI community and a location that was really an iconic location.
Well known to our community as well.
Yeah, and unfortunately not known to the police at the time, because they weren't from that area. They'd been chasing this car for some distance, and we ended up in this really regrettable set of circumstances.
Graham, I need to ask you this because it's been a topic of conversation in our community. It's been very hotly discussed, as you could imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this a case of homophobia in the police force?
Well, I know why that question comes up, obviously. It comes up, and it's sensible that it comes up. But, from all the inquiries that I've made, and there is an investigation that we've launched onto this, and we asked IBAC, who are the independent body that investigates matters. We've asked them to investigate this as well, so it has that independence. But all the information I have, and in the circumstances that I've just sort of outlined, there's been nothing that indicates that police members knew the individual, this poor gentleman, and or knew the location significance either. So I guess from my point of view, I don't think it's anything that where it's been a targeted assault or a targeted attack in any way. But I can certainly understand why that comes up immediately when this sort of thing occurs. And like I say, if you're writing a horror movie script, you know, it's just, you couldn't make it up the way this thing's panned out.
It feels like it's one bad story to another bad story. We'll come back to the Metropolitan Community Church, but only yesterday the Victorian Human Rights Commission launched a report that described the police force as having a culture of hypermasculinity that fuels aggressive remarks and sexual harassment. I'm quoting here from a news report from yesterday's Age.
Ah, yes, yes.
And then it also references a number of quotes from police members themselves that were quite homophobic and transphobic in their orientation. So you can see why there would be members of our community who would be feeling vulnerable and concerned that there would be this sense of overt or covert homophobia and transphobia.
Absolutely. Look, in relation to that article, we actually commissioned that work. We asked the VERIOC to examine where we were at internally, because we've been providing specialist training to our police for some time now in relation to policing, specialist areas of the community, and a very important area of community in this case, which is LGBTI community. We've been providing specialist training to our members, but in part of doing that, we realise that we have members who are from community in the force. We have several hundred members, and it could be more than 1,000 members in the force who are from community. So for us, we wanted to try and make sure we had as safe a workplace as possible for all of those people. So we commissioned that work from VERIOC, and we got that back a while ago, and I wanted to make that public because we need to be accountable for change and accountable for the services we provide. So I put it on our website and made that public, because it then provides the community with the opportunity to see how we're progressing. It makes a number of recommendations, as does their broader report into gender equality, which was the other piece that we were doing with VERIOC. And it provides us with some strong recommendations going forward as to how we can improve Victoria Police. I think we have improved a lot, particularly over the last 10 years. But nonetheless, we still have members from community who still experience some pretty bad things in terms of internal behaviour. But I don't think I don't think we're alone in that regard. I think there are plenty of organisations across our community where members of the community would be experiencing similar experiences.
Yes.
But I'd like to think that at least we are looking to recognise it and are looking to address it, and hopefully by doing that and being accountable, we can provide some leadership there in terms of encouraging other organisations to do different similar things.
I think, Graham, I understand that, and there's first off, I'd like you to reassure the community, to back up what you've said, that this was not a targeted incident in terms of the sexuality of the people and where it was. Because I think people need to be reassured about that, because, we're coming up actually to 20 years of when the Victoria Police first started officially engaging with our community, and I was part of that all those years ago. And then I remember the very first gay and lesbian liaison officer that was appointed, Melinda Edwards. And I remember attending many meetings. And the people at those meetings, yes, they had a really strong commitment. But it seems to me, one, our community needs some reassurance, so I'd like that from you. But we've been at this for 20 years. This report highlights a serious issue. Comments like, in my day, you'd be taken out the back of the station and shot in the head. And this is a police officer, a senior police officer, saying this to another officer. It's not good enough.
Well, firstly, on the first point, we absolutely, let me absolutely reassure you that what happened last weekend wasn't, and I'm very satisfied, wasn't a case of an attack on community or attack on that person because they were a prominent member or a member of that community. Look, I think the first thing on that report is that it does cover people's experiences throughout their careers. And then a lot of the things that are talked about are not things that have happened yesterday, but that have happened over the years. That's not to say that things aren't happening today, but there are... We found with the work we did on the gender equality work within police about the safety of women in policing, that it's a hyper-masculine culture. And it's not Robinson Crusoe in that way, but it is an organisation that has a hypermasculine culture. So when you're looking at what the hypernormative sort of behaviours really are around masculinity, and we've got to change that. And we are committed to changing it.
So how do you change it, Graeme? I mean, as I said, we've had we've had 20 years of official engagement. It's been very productive with Victoria Police around our community and understanding, you know, and all different communities will have similar, not similar issues, but things that they want the police to identify with. You know, we know the police is very diverse in terms of the races that are police members, you know, education levels, religious beliefs and sexuality. But it seems that 20 years on, you know, this report highlights to me that you guys have got a serious problem. And, you know, except, okay, I don't know what the tying of some of this is, but it didn't stop yesterday. Right? It's still going on. And so what do you do?
Well, it's all about what we've found with the other changes that we've made culturally. It's all about, and it does require cultural change, is all about leadership. So we've got to provide the right leadership in Victoria Police, and whether that's through initiating further training and more training on top of what we are doing, continue to doing the things like flying the flag, flying the rainbow flag, getting involved with community. And right across the state, we are deeply involved with community around these issues, and particularly in rural Victoria, where there's a deep need for that. We've been sort of central in playing that role in doing that. Picking up the other initiatives that are happening around the state, which I know you're talking to Ro Allen later, but certainly she is doing a power of work in leading and developing initiatives, and I think by providing leadership and getting behind those initiatives, supporting them and bringing those into Victoria Police, which we have been doing, is going to be a really important part of that progress. And the important point for me to make is that we are committed to that progress. We are committed to improving right across the force in terms of how we treat all our employees, no matter what their background, no matter what their, in this case, their sexual orientation, or no matter where they're from in terms of religious or faith, and what part of the community they're from. We've got to be treating everyone equally and giving them an equal chance to progress within their careers, but also to be safe at work. And we are absolutely committed to doing that.
That's very encouraging to hear those words from you, Graeme.
It is.
I was reminded by one of our listeners that there perhaps was a case of racial profiling that took place last weekend as well, given that the particular person who was very badly hurt is of an ethnic background, but perhaps might have looked like he was from a Middle Eastern background.
The police on that case had a suspect identified in terms of very, very general description. And so I think they've been operating on that description. We're not even 100% sure whether it was the right description, but they had a description that they were given. But it wasn't, again, a case of racial profiling either.
That's encouraging to hear that. Thank you.
It is. Look, I know you probably can't talk about it in detail, Graeme, but as an outside observer, there were four officers involved in the...
At the actual scene, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one person who, you know, a member of our community who left the premises and, you know, because he thought it was he was under attack, you know, through sexuality. So four officers have him on the ground and his arm is broken in two places. This seems to me excessive. Now, I use that word awkwardly, because I wasn't there, but how do you break someone's arm in two places, and why do you need four members and experienced members, critical incident response team members, to hold someone down? I mean, he wasn't an ice addict, he wasn't off his face. Four people and his arm broken in two places, that seems excessive.
Yeah, that's something that I probably have to... I mean, I wasn't there either, so I have to let the investigation, and as I said, IBAC will be obviously central to that, being an independent body, but that's the part that we really need to unpack too, as to how the arrest occurred and how many people were actually arresting him, as opposed to how many people were there, and then how this injury has occurred, whether that was a case of excessive force or not. So But I can assure you that's going to be looked at independently, and it won't just be the police doing that. So, and the results of that will be very public. So we won't be, you know, while using IBAC, we provide that further reassurance that that's out there in community. We'll see the results of that independent look by IBAC. So, and we'll take action off the back of that. So depending what IBAC find.
You know, look, I'll show you my cards here. I don't believe police should be investigating police. I don't believe Ambulance Victoria should investigate complaints against paramedics and the fire, you know, and fire service, etc. I think there needs to be an independent body, and that's a discussion for another day. But in this case, you actually referred this matter to IBAC.
Correct.
And that's not the normal course, is it?
In cases where we want to provide additional reassurance to the community, absolutely, I refer matters to IBAC.
Okay. Wouldn't that be... If I might play devil's advocate here, wouldn't that be in any of these instances where, you know, something like this has happened, wouldn't you do that in every case? But, I mean, it comes back to police investigating police, doesn't it?
Yeah, look,
I can see why people have a problem with that.
Look, I understand the argument as to why police shouldn't investigate police, and I might say IBAC oversight all our complaint processes, so it's not a case of us keeping them out on any matter. But in some matters, we absolutely want them to take the lead and look at the matter in totality without us sort of having our fingerprints on it at all, if you like. But whilst I understand the argument about police investigating police and I understand the logic behind that, it makes sense to me too. There's a couple of things about that that make that problematic to me as the police commissioner. And I've got to provide leadership within the police. So I've got to get all of our hundreds and hundreds of police leaders in the organisation to lead effectively. And in my experience, once you take things out of their hands, it's very easy for them then to say, oh, that's not my issue. Integrity needs to be, and ethics need to be, at the core of every police leader's decision-making. And I don't want a culture in the police force where anything that happens operationally, they're leading, they're doing this, but anything that has a remote ethical slant to it or something that might be complaint-related, think, well, that's not my responsibility. I'm washing my hands of that. That goes off to an independent body. To me, that might provide more clarity to the community, but it's not going to lead to a more professional police force because it will lead to them having a culture where they're not taking responsibility, and leadership is at the absolute core of integrity. If you're not leading it, it won't exist. And so that's one issue I have with it. The second is a very practical issue around the amount of investment and skills that are required to do the sorts of investigations that sometimes have to be done. Yeah. So it's not just a case of investigating, but also, you know, if there's, say, a police involvement in a shooting, you've got the crime scene management, you've got the forensics, you've got the community reassurance that sits around that has to be done. You've got literally hundreds of police involved in that matter, as well as the oversight agency, and trying to have some sort of standalone body that has all those skills is extremely a difficult thing to do as well. So there's a couple of things there that sort of mitigate against that.
I mean, if I can just say, look, I understand that, Graham, and you know, ironically, we're in a building, and you know, this part of Bourke Street's very familiar to you.
Yes.
You know, an awful incident that happened here,
just outside, in
just outside, right outside, and where you know two of your members took on this person, and you know that person sustained fatal wounds from that. I think there's a member of the community, any community, that is incredibly thankful for what Victoria Police did that day, the action that they took. And
along with Trolley Man.
And along with Trolley Man and other, you know, and other things, because, you know, we rely on the police in moments of difficulty and we all appreciate that, and I certainly acknowledge that. The matter of police investigating police, I understand the intricacies there and the difficulties, but I don't support it. I think we need to find a better way to do it. You said you've referred it to IBAC. What sort of time frame do you think it will IBAC, you know, just to, you know, not next Tuesday or, you know, but, you know, like what sort of time frame do you think?
Well, I would hope it's weeks, not months, type thing. That's what I'm hoping,
Okay.
Yeah. Graham, we're almost out of time, but I was just wondering, as the leader of the Victorian Police Force, what's your message to our communities this morning live on radio?
Oh, well, look, I guess the main reason for being here this morning was just we had that event last week, and I just wanted to try and reassure community that this hasn't been a targeted attack on community or an individual within community. It was a set of circumstances that has just been as unfortunate and as tragic as you would want, as you could think, really, in terms of trying to think of something that could happen in that manner. It's just so regrettable, and we're obviously so sorry that the person has got the injuries that he has. So I guess the main reason is about that reassurance piece. But also, I think you talked about a bit before, I mean, we've been here in Victoria for 160 years trying to be there for the community, and whilst things like the reports that you mentioned this morning might highlight there are individuals who won't do the right thing, my 9% of them are, and are very committed to helping the community. And I think that from my point of view, well, I know from my point of view, as I go around the state, I continually see our police doing important work, and often in very, very difficult circumstances, and we're absolutely committed from our leadership perspective, and I know from the many thousands in the force that we are absolutely committed to the whole community, not just part of the community. Everyone in community deserves the support of the police and deserves professional conduct from the police, and we're absolutely committed to doing that. And 99% of the time, that's the way it plays out. And when it doesn't, we've got to put our hand up and say it. We've stuffed up, and that we want to get better, and that's been our philosophy. It's certainly been my philosophy since I've been police commissioner. At the same time, we have to be able to sort of state the facts and set the record straight. And I think if we do, that's the best way to maintain trust with the community, is to own your mistakes,
yeah.
And say we stuffed up, and where we do the right thing, and we're accused of doing something we haven't done, is also to try and correct the record as well. And I think that's what we remain committed to the community to try and do.
That's very encouraging to hear those.
And look, I want to thank you, Graeme, for coming. We've run out of time. Look, there is the other matter of the incident at the Metropolitan Community Church. We'd like to... I know you guys are investigating that. There's a particular offence, disrupting a place of worship. Don't want to give any of the, you know, a lot of our community are not so aware of this, but I'd like, you know, to invite you back in a month's time to talk to us about how that investigation has gone, how the IBAC investigation has gone, to bring our community up to date. I think it's important that the leaders of, you know, the organisation, in this case you're the Chief Commissioner, we'll always have a spot on air for you. And I want to thank you for giving up some of your Saturday. It's not easy being in the spotlight and, you know, talking honestly and openly about what's happened. I appreciate it.
That's I'm happy for the chance to be here and grateful for the chance to have a chat, and any time you want me back, I'm happy to be here.
We would definitely like you back,
yes.
Because August is the 20th anniversary of the initial engagement between Victoria Police and the LGBTI community through the establishment of the, I think it was called the Police Ministerial Advisory Committee.
Yes, that's right.
And
yeah,
we would love to have the opportunity to talk with you about that, and perhaps we'll talk to some of the GLOW police officers and some of the people who were part of that process 20 years ago.
Yeah. That'd be fantastic. Love
great,
that opportunity.
Great. Thank you for your time this morning. Thank you for your reassurance. It's very encouraging to hear that you as the leader are really wanting to set the right signals and transparently talk about what's going on and openly engaging with our community. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.